Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews. We're like a book club for people who hate reading. This month is Grab Bag, so I picked the movie 12 O'Clock High, made in 1949, along with Season 1, Episode 1 of Netflix Marvel's Iron Fist. This week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens,
hello,
and Ryan Preston. So here's a description of 12 O'Clock High, 1949. A hard-as-nailed general takes over a bomber unit suffering from low morale and whips them into fighting shape. It's, I guess, the very broad brushstrokes of the movie.
Yeah.
This is 1949, literally pretty much right after the war.
Yeah. Right after Chuck Norris was born and the Nazis surrendered. Bastards. Die.
So the thing that really blew me away about this movie was this is one of the very few movies I've seen that take place in World War II that aren't in the bombers. Because they always show the bombardier, the guy and the people in the middle of the ship. This is the first one that takes place primarily in the ground, in the administration. This blew my mind. For me, this is a 4.5 out of 5. I don't know. It was amazing. And it's Gregory Peck, Hugh Marlowe, just an amazing cast of characters. James?
For what time frame it was, they were, there was a lot of stuff that they were able to put together. They even said that the Luftwaffe guys, that was footage from the actual German planes along with the Allied footage. All of it was actually real archive footage. And yeah, it's not a story they get told very often from the admin side of it. And I like the fact that they even gave you like portions where you were waiting to find out how many came back and the count and the stress of that.
I appreciated that so much.
Yeah, this one's a good 4 for me.
Ryan?
I'm pretty much with John on the rating, 4.5. I mean, damn, this movie kicked ass. But for not really the reasons you would typically expect from a World War II movie, especially made in 49. I mean, really can't be stated enough that this was right after the war. I mean, it's like watching Lone Survivor today or something like that. I mean, it's just so close to the source, that it has a different feeling. But also, since we're so far past the 40s, and we're basically, sorry to say it this way, running out of World War II vets.
Fast.
It's interesting to see kind of like, those are what the people looked like at the time. And this is the feeling, this was the speech patterns and kind of set the story a little more than can be told with modern actors and things, I guess.
Oh, no, I completely agree.
This is a psychological war movie. This is not your average. At the time when America's just like, hey, go America, a lot of, some would say propaganda-esque types of movies, coming out very pro-war. This is the same time that, like, Captain America was huge because it was just punching Nazis in the face. For this one to kind of take that, like, hey, war sucks kind of thing and take it to that level, like James was saying, with the I don't know who's coming back and just the mention of suicide and things like that that happened. And for record, the bombardier groups in B-17s is like the stupidest job. I mean, mortality rate for those guys was so fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And I mean, every one of those dudes was absolutely out of their minds, but damn, are this just the toughest bastards ever.
Yeah, and I like the fact that that one guy that they were put up for the Medal of Honor, and he comes in and he's like, I'm here for the pilots and the crews, and they want to switch. How many? All of them.
I totally dig the fact that in the middle way through the movie, he's like, dude, I just want to switch. I don't care what I do.
Yeah.
The thing about this movie that amazed me is this movie was the pace was constant throughout the movie pretty much, and it pretty much opened hitting you in the balls with like, the former he was a colonel, and they said that the main general guys, okay, you're coddling guys too much, you're out, you need a break, and it literally didn't relent from there.
No.
And this one, I usually say when you do black and white movies that the black and white is a character in the movie, which normally it is. I would say in this movie, not as much. It doesn't do our kind of the noir-esque playing with the darkened lights. It's pretty, in the way I'm kind of viewing it, it's almost like just a window. Like you're just
watching
it was just the stationary
type of thing.
And what's funny is it occurred to me like halfway through this damn movie, like there's no music in this movie at all. It was fucking eerie.
There was some singing in it, but yeah, don't have like
They were singing from the bar.
Yeah, score. There was no little sings, no little background things. It was just you had some opening music over the 2 minutes worth of credits. Yeah. Actually, good on you, 1940s, with a short credit sequence for once.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't like I'm gonna really blow this one, but that B-17 movie that came out in the early 90s. It was about the only plane that actually, one of the first people who actually retired out of that mission.
I'm trying to remember.
For some reason, it's escaping me, but if you watch this movie and that movie, basically the same basic context, but the difference is this one is closer to the time.
Yeah, this one's closer to the actual, to how things were.
What's interesting is that seems to be the general consensus between World War II vets, and especially even at the time, is like this is the first movie that they saw that was, you know, like accurate to the feeling and to the tension and all of it, and you know, didn't show war in any kind of a sort of a glorifying way. What's funny is Gregory Peck, the hippie that he was, wanted it to be even more anti-war, but it's funny coming from a guy who's played 1,000 military servicemen over the years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, really, Gregory Peck, man, killing it from way back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, he really did lay it on. I wanted to bring up, there's a lot of good quotes in this one as well. One of the ones that made me laugh the most was one of the guys coming up and says, "Give me a cigarette." The guy responds, "Need a light, too? I have only the habit, Lieutenant." I mean, that type of stuff.
My favorite moment, flat out, was when the adjutant was telling Peck about this paperwork is going to take a while. By the time it gets back to me, you know, 10 days, and you know, kind of buying him the time, right?
Yeah,
and he's like, "You red tape bastards are all the same."
He basically said, you know, "I'm going to lose the paperwork from here to there."
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, and he's, you know, like kind of taking the usual sort of like, "Oh, you paper pushes are all the same," hint, hint, wink, wink. It was the coolest moment.
The Memphis Belle, I'm sorry, is the movie I'm thinking
yes.
about.
Oh, yeah, right.
And if you compare and contrast the two, that one, I don't believe I'm saying this, I don't think as dramatic as this one is. And you're talking about a movie that was 89, 90-something. It was, for those type of movies, in my opinion, was a little over-dramatic or super cut and dry.
This one wasn't very dry.
No, this, like I said, the first time I saw this movie, it was one of the very few movies from that time period that literally blew my mind.
It really, really holds up, man.
Yeah, surprisingly, because you don't expect a lot of black and whites to hold up in pretty much in the era that we're in now, because I mean, we have the movies we have, even the suspense, horrors, dramas, are all faster pace. This one, like you said, it has a steady pace that it gives you what to expect in the beginning.
I would say the reason why, in my opinion, the reason this holds
attention
up
span?
Is this is pretty much, it's and it's obvious. I mean, it's a total character driven movie, and I think that's the reason why it takes place in 1949, but because war is so common, unfortunately, there's a lot of stuff that you can transplant yourself in 1949 and see what these guys are going through.
Yeah.
Like them not wanting to be there. The original colonel saying, you know, "These are my men." And you have the military saying, "No, these are machines," type of thing. And
yeah,
that's the reason I think it holds up so well.
Well, I think it's also, you know, a very kind of respectful way to tell the story. I mean, you know, middle of the 40s, you know, everyone was, like I said, sort of making these big pro punching Nazis in the face, as I'm a fan of saying. kind of movies, but this one,
killing that
after everyone's come back and you know they went away and they're regarded as heroes, but they come back and they got these things that they don't want to talk about, you know. Yeah. And I think the reason it holds up partly is because war sucks anytime it is.
Yeah.
You know, and the people who had fought the war will come back and be like yeah, we're heroes. Yeah, it sucks ass.
Yeah,
you know, so it's a very universal and very constant thing, but also again, kind of respectful to the people who went through it. That it wasn't glorifying it; it was just like, hey, look, this is the reality of the situation that we were in. You know,
and yeah.
Very ahead of its time.
I wouldn't say this movie's anti-war, but it's definitely not pro-war.
You had Donald Duck doing pro-war movies.
Well, no, I meant like this particular movie, I don't think it was pro-war or anti-war. I think it was closer to anti-war, but I think it was like pro-people. Like if you watch that era, definitely not. I mean, you had this hard-driving colonel and blah, blah, blah. I think this is just, you know, pro-people and seeing the suffering it causes. You have the people who want to be treated like people and not machines. You had the general who wanted results and later on realized, hey, maybe the colonel was right. That's why I think this is really cool. It's the first movie that I've seen that was war that's – because usually pro-people movies and war movies are totally anti-war.
Yeah.
I think this let you make up your own kind of opinion as you go.
Yeah.
You know, it makes no opinions about the reasons. Or anything like that, or why we're at war, or whatever. It's just like, hey, look, we have a duty. This is what it's about.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to bring up was the opening little line where it said, you know, this is dedicated to the. I'm not going to remember the whole quote entirely, but mentioning the footage of the planes was actual combat footage from the Luftwaffe and the American Air Force. When it tells you that in the beginning, I think it's an interesting choice just because you remember that watching the whole fucking movie.
Yeah.
You know, so when you actually see it, you get, again, sort of that eerie, no music, just like, oh, wow, this shit actually happened.
Yeah, that German pilot that tried to bail out of the plane, and unsuccessfully, by the way, that really happened.
I do think one of the reasons why that helps is because if you watch a movie like that today and they say, oh, this is blah, 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 you're thinking, okay, this is not true, they're stretching the truth. Yeah. I think because this is 1949, I personally think it lends itself to being, okay, this is a little bit more truer. Maybe they weren't stretching truth because, A, the people back then were you were full of it. Because there were more people around to call you, you know, to be Johnny on the spot and say, wrong there, pal.
Yeah.
Hey, I got my other job calling me. I got to call you back.
Okay. Right.
This is just, and my apologies, Ryan's actually using the phone. So if you hear my ringtone, my humble apologies.
Oh, whatever.
This movie. This is the second or third time I've seen this movie within the last year. Every time I watch it, I've got a whole new appreciation. And I just love the fact it's pretty much like, you know, you're spying on people in 1949 and watching interactions.
Yeah, you know, I still think even with everything on that, I still think that, I mean, for me, it's not a 5 perfectly, you know, because that's really what we hold the standard up to of a perfect 5. But, you know, I mean, I still stand with a strong 4. Because I think it's a good one for historical accuracy. And like you guys said, I mean, it doesn't really throw an opinion at you. It lets you decide where things are.
And you guys have no idea how much I appreciate, I personally appreciate that. In eras where you got, was it Jarhead? And you've got this movie and this movie where they're all.
The Hurt Locker.
Yes.
Sandra Bullock.
When you have all these movies where like they're anti-war, and honestly, the artists who are in them and the writers, they're welcome to opinion. But I do like the fact that there's movies that say, "Bah!" Like here's the situation, here's the people. You make up your mind. We're just going to give you a story. I appreciate that more than anybody will ever know. And for me, this is a strong 4.5. Part of it is because I'm just a bigger fan of black and white movies. If you've watched this show, you guys kind of realize that. I like the simpler storytelling. I do think it helps make a better character-driven movie without having people who are so over-dramatic like they are today.
Okay.
Because if you watch movies today, they're super overdramatic.
Yeah, they really are.
And
they really, really are.
My assumption, and this is kind of guess until Ryan calls us back, my guess is Ryan's going to stay with his 4.5.
Yeah, I see the same.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a Facebook page. Do you love us, hate us, let us know. Do you have movie news? Or do you have a movie you'd love us to do? You can also catch us on Podbean, Stitcher, iTunes, and more. And so we're switching to Season 1, Episode 1 of Marvel's Iron Fist. And it kind of sets basically the scene where it starts off is, I can never remember the dude's actual name. Oh, Danny Rand.
I was going to say, the actor or Danny Rand?
Danny Rand. Basically, Danny Rand comes back from whatever mystical place he was back into New York.
Oh, I'm drawing a blank on the actual name of the
like
thing.
Kung Lung.
Yeah, Kung Lung.
And pretty much shenanigan happens. I can see why a lot of people were really upset with this for some reason. Because it's not, it doesn't punch you in the face. It's not a kung fu movie. I totally dug it.
Well, the story of Iron Fist isn't really one of that, you know? I mean, he's got the basics. His parents are dead. You know, you got that type of stuff, but...
But if you watch, like, if you like him and Power Man, you know, they're pretty much, you know, mercenaries, rent-to-own type of thing.
Yeah.
They're J.C. Whitney heroes. I liked the intro. This is one of the few superhero movies that, A, I haven't seen a whole lot of, if they've been around. Because there's a ton of Batman origin stories. There's a ton of Superman. So I like the fact you have a hero who's a little, he's not as well known.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's pretty much Bruce Wayne type of thing, but well, I appreciated it.
What I really like about this...
Ryan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Okay, so we're gonna rewind a little bit. What was the rating you gave for it?
4.5.
Oh, 4.5.
Okay.
And I'm sticking with that. It's such a damn good movie.
Yeah, we're on a... We just jumped on Iron Fist right now. You know, yeah, you're right. The first episode isn't one where it's trying to blow you out of the water, but I appreciate that Netflix and Amazon and even some of the you know, like Showtime, HBO, don't take that whole thing and be like, throw you in the middle of it and have action everywhere. They're building a story, they're building a character, and they're taking their time with it. I appreciate
that. See, that's the thing that blew me out of the water, though. It wasn't a giant spectacle, like if you watch any Alphabet channels, for example. It blew me out of the water because it's basically, it's simple storytelling, and they let the story do it, you know, basically tell its story. I'm really applauding Netflix for actually doing something right.
Yeah, and this is kind of the thing that I have with what are the other ones we did with Supergirl and The Flash. Those ones kind of threw you in with all the action and everything and try to grab you that way.
Same way with Gotham. Excuse the expression, but they blow their load right up front, and then you're trying to figure out what else can you do? You've basically told everything within two hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, everything becomes, you know, Muppet Babies at that point.
Exactly.
You know, it's just like we're watching Batman when he's like, you know, just a young version of Batman.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a weird thing, and yeah, I totally agree. Well, what I liked about this one is I just like the characters right off the bat.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have to like, oh, I don't know about this one. That's all I really need. You know, out of something like this, is like, do I like the characters? And good old Loris Tyrell, man, who'd have known he'd be a great actor.
Yeah, and even the, I'm trying to pull up the guy's name, but the guy who plays Ward, Meacham, Tom Pelfrey,
right,
was also in Banshee. He was the
big
Aryan Brotherhood guy. Dude, amazing actor.
The ex-Nazi who becomes a deputy sheriff.
Yeah.
Great character, and didn't recognize him at all.
I was flipping out. I'm like, I know this guy. It was like the first three episodes, and it was like the third episode until I figured out who he was.
I would say that's the one thing this does better than, I'd say, 90% of TV shows. It sets the stage. You know who the characters are, and you instantaneously hate the person who's in charge of the ward of a Rand Corporation. And you like his sister, but you kind of understand. So, I mean, bravo for having... I mean, this is like wrestling shit. I mean, like how good they actually made you draw in and loving a character.
Yeah, and I'm going to also throw David
Wynham. I'm sorry, go ahead, man.
I was just going to throw David Wynham out there as another fantastic actor that stepped up in this role as well.
But
the guy from 300.
It's a it's a show that, or a story rather, that's not your mainstream, you know, it's not Superman, it's not Captain America, you know, not even Flash, where people know like a couple of cursory things about it. Most people don't know Iron Fist.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with Luke Cage. It was this handful of people that were like, oh, yeah, yeah, Superman, Iron Fist. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, they shut down Netflix on that one.
Yeah, they did. They sure did. But this one, it's a lesser-known thing, and they're actually still taking their time telling the story, giving you little glimpses here and there. You know, and I mean, yeah, they're doing a good job. I'm enjoying the shit out of it. I'm on like episode eight or nine.
I did want to give a little bit of a trivia because I was watching something about this earlier today, and I thought it was interesting. Luke Cage / Power Man, the comic book came around about the time of the height of the blaxploitation movies.
Oh.
And this one, Iron Fist, came around when the Kung Fu movie started really popular in the United States. So these are comic books at the time were riding the wave of popularity, but have kind of waned. So it is kind of cool to see stories that are fleshed out. But it's not something, you know, like we said, that, you know, everybody knows.
Yeah. I have this one nitpick with Netflix, and you just got to stop it. Rosario Dawson does not need to be in every single one of these, all right?
So here,
I'm tired of her face. She looks like a horse. Get rid of her.
Rosario
Dawson's cute. Come on.
So there is something I thought was interesting. They're going to combine them. They're going to pretty much, because all these people are on the same team,
yeah.
And so they're doing it so they can show, okay, this person's in the same universe, and I didn't realize that until after I saw it, and I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
Ryan, how far did you go with Jessica Jones?
Not too far, but I'm familiar with that she is also a affiliate / friend.
Yeah, she's an affiliate of this. They tied her in with Ward's sister. They did not tie her in with Rosario, which is I found interesting. They tied it in with Ward's sister because I don't know where you are. I'm not going to spoil anything, but pay attention to that. So, I'm almost done with this, but it's a good must-watch.
Yeah, so we're coming close to the end of the series. Next week is James's pick, so batter's up.
So I'm picking one that I've had on my just kind of movie list. It's got Joe Pesci in it, Christy Swanson, and I'm gonna see if Ryan can pick up this one, and David Spade. Do you know Christy Swanson? And she played Buffy in the movies.
Yeah.
Joe Pesci.
David Spade and Joe Pesci.
Christy Swanson and David Spade.
My Cousin Vinny?
Nope. You ready?
Yeah.
Eight heads in a duffel bag.
Oh, jeez. I haven't.
Oh, shit. Wow. Right. I forgot David Spade was in that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was in that movie.
So, how did you guys both forget that David Spade was in this movie?
I haven't seen that movie since it came out. So
God. Exactly. And the TV show we are going to be doing is, I had the time frame of it. I think it was like 2009 is when this one came out. The Misfits. Episode 1.2, so season 1, episode 2.
Okay, so...
Oh, okay, yeah, Misfits, BBC, right?
Yep.
So, ladies and gentlemen, next week we're doing the movie...
Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag.
And?
The Misfits, episode 1.2.
For Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston, as always, thank you for watching.
Goodbye. Oh, 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 oh